Okay, enough of this. Again, apologies, people, for the extended theme. Well, it's a nice theme, but whenever you hear the theme going on that long, you know something's majorly screwed up here at the radio station. And, of course, it has to happen at 1 minute after 6 o'clock when that's all of a sudden when our internet stream decides to go down or when someone decides to tell me about it. So I've been spending the last 10 minutes or so trying to fix it. And, of course, I can't do that because somebody took the keyboard away from the computer, and it's very hard to play with a computer with no keyboard. So it looks like, once again, our efforts have been thwarted and we have no internet stream, which means we can't reach our listeners in this ever-so-important post-election show. I'm sorry, I guess I've got to get here 4 hours early to ensure that nobody messes with anything. Do I sound angry? I am. I'm angry about that, but I should be angry about more important things. So hopefully our listeners know to call anyway, even though they can't hear us, those people who are outside of our listening range, which seems to decrease by the day. But regardless, if you're in that little listening range that reaches most of Suffolk County, I hope, give us a call at 631-632-WUSB, because we want to talk about the events of last week. I really want to talk to people in the red states. Try and understand some of the mindsets back there. I guess we won't be able to do that. Sorry. Well, anyway, let's take a look at what's going on in the news. And maybe that'll cheer us up a little bit. Of course, the assault on Fallujah, which, have anyone else noticed that Fallujah seems to have lost an H somewhere in the last couple of weeks? I could have sworn it used to be spelled F-A-L-L-U-J-A-H. Now there's no H at the end. I don't know why that happened. Well, anyway, I guess that's the least important matter there. The assault on Fallujah is underway. Yes, that's right. U.S. troops have moved into the center of Fallujah, the heart of Fallujah, as they call it, along with some Iraqi troops, but mostly U.S. troops. 10 U.S. soldiers have been killed so far, and that, according to the Pentagon, is minimal. Yes, minimal casualties. 10 killed in one day. I guess, you know, they were prepared for hundreds. Who knows? Of course, many, many more on the other side have been killed, but we're not going to count them. At least not now. It'll be inconvenient, you know. U.S. and Iraqi forces have faced less resistance than expected. Soldiers have dodged sniper fire and destroyed booby traps, but not as many as anticipated. Why do you think that is? Why do you think that happened? Maybe because everybody knew the United States was going to be moving into Fallujah. I'm sorry, I'm going to say the United States because that's what it is. That's what it is. The United States is doing this. Yeah, they've brought along some Iraqi troops for show. But let's be real here. These are not the Iraqi troops doing this. It's the United States. All right, so U.S. has moved into Fallujah. And according to the Pentagon, they've killed or wounded 85 to 90 insurgents so far. 30 hours into the fighting, and the U.S. has sustained minimal casualties. Well, let's take a look at another media outlet. And I don't mean Fox. I was watching Fox, actually, because I like to be amused sometimes. And it's incredible. It's incredible seeing how they refer to things like this. They refer to the other side, the people that are fighting the U.S. invaders. And I'm not taking sides by calling them the U.S. invaders, but they are. Even if you think it's the best thing in the world, the U.S. is invading another country. I mean, can we really argue that point? I don't think so. These are U.S. invaders. In any event, these people that are fighting the U.S. invaders are referred to on Fox as terrorists. That's incredible. They're terrorists. The United States invaded this country and went to this town to kill terrorists. And everybody who is firing back and resisting the foreign invasion is a terrorist. And in every sentence, every expression of the reporting that I saw, it referred to the U.S. side as we. You know, we have to do this in order to make things safer for us. I might as well have been watching a Pentagon briefing, looking at this Fox reporting. Now, I don't think it's always that bad. I have seen some attempts at balance at Fox, but really not very many. and this certainly wasn't one of them. But anyway, let's go. Let's tip the scale in the other direction, and look at Al Jazeera, which has the benefit of reporting from the scene, being in that region of the world themselves. Mohammed Abud said he watched his 9-year-old son bleed to death at their Fallujah home, unable to take him to the hospital as fighting raged in the streets and bombs rained down on the Iraqi city. In the midst of a U.S. onslaught and hemmed in by a round-the-clock curfew, he said he had little choice but to bury his eldest son, Gaith, in the garden. My son got shrapnel in his stomach when our house was hit at dawn, but we couldn't take him for treatment. We buried him in the garden because it was too dangerous to go out. We did not know how long the fighting would last. Residents say scores of civilians have been killed or wounded in 24 hours of fighting since U.S.-led forces pushed deep into the city on Monday evening. Doctors said people brought in at least 15 dead civilians at the main clinic in Fallujah on Monday. By Tuesday, there were no clinics open, residents said, and no way to count casualties. U.S. and Iraqi forces seized control of the city's main hospital across the Euphrates River from Fallujah proper hours before the onslaught began. Overnight, U.S. bombardments hit a clinic inside the Sunni Muslim city, killing doctors, nurses, and patients, residents said. U.S. military authorities denied the reports. Interim Iraqi Prime Minister Iyad Alawi said troops detained 38 fighters entrenched at Fallujah Hospital and accused doctors there of exaggerating civilian casualties. Sami al-Jumali, who was a doctor at Fallujah Hospital, said the city was running out of medical supplies. There was not a single surgeon in Fallujah. We had one ambulance hit by U.S. fire and a doctor wounded. There are scores of injured civilians in their homes whom we can't move, he said by telephone from the house where he had gone to help the wounded. A 13-year-old child just died in my hands. The International Committee of the Red Cross said on Tuesday that it was extremely worried about the fate of people wounded in the ferocious battle for control of the Iraqi city of Fallujah. The ICRC urges the belligerents to ensure that all those in need of such care, whether friend or foe, be given access to medical facilities and that medical personnel and vehicles can function without hindrance at all times. Yeah, you think that's going to happen anytime soon? Got it. The organization said it was deeply concerned about reports that the injured cannot receive adequate medical care. Weekend air raids destroyed a clinic funded by an Islamic relief organization in the center of Fallujah and a nearby warehouse used to store medical supplies, witnesses said. Many families fled the city of 300,000 long before the offensive began. An official from a Sunni Muslim group with links to some fighters in Fallujah said on Monday only about 60,000 people remained. Residents said they have no power and are using kerosene lamps at night. They say they keep the ground floors for safety. Food shops have been closed for 6 days. My kids are hysterical with fear, said Farhan Sali. They are traumatized by the sound, but there is nowhere to take them. U.S. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld said on Monday he did not foresee large numbers of civilian casualties in the assault. I don't know what he's smoking, really. I mean, how do you invade a city with an all-out offensive and not have a massive amount of civilian casualties? I'd like to know that trick. He says U.S. forces were disciplined and precise. Yeah. Those words were of little comfort to the Abud family sitting in a house damaged by the bomb that killed their child. Well, that's one side. You can say they're lying, you can say they're making it all up, but can you prove it? Can you prove that these people aren't dying? I don't think so, because we don't count them. We don't count the other side. Well, in actuality, we can estimate the other side. And that's what some people have been doing. There was a study that came out about a week and a half ago that put the Iraqi toll at around 100,000. Around 100,000 Iraqi civilians have died since the United States invaded Iraq in March of last year. 100,000 civilians! Now, this comes not from Al Jazeera, not from Al Qaeda, not from some left-wing nutcase someplace. Comes from the Lancet Medical Journal of London, and according to them, experts from the United States and Iraq also said the risk of death for Iraqi civilians was 2.5 times greater after the invasion. There's been no official figure for the number of Iraqis killed since the conflict began 18 months ago, but some non-government estimates have ranged from 10,000 to 30,000. The researchers surveyed nearly 1,000 Iraqi households in September, asking how many people lived in the home and how many births and deaths there had been since January 2002. They then compared the death rate among those households during the 15 months before the invasion with the 18 months after it, getting death certificates where they could. The experts in the United States and Iraq said most of those who died were women and children, and airstrikes and coalition forces accounted for most of the violent deaths. The study was designed and conducted by researchers at Johns Hopkins University, Columbia University, and the Al-Mustansiriya University in Baghdad. While the researchers said the risk of death was 2.5 times more likely after the invasion, they conceded that the risk was 1.5 times higher if mortality around Fallujah was excluded. Two-thirds of violent deaths recorded in the study were reported in the Sunni Triangle city of Fallujah. Yet Donald Rumsfeld says there's not going to be civilian casualties. Go figure that one out. All right, I've got people yelling outside the studio. I'm sorry about that. I think it's organized conspiracy here. Let's see. So we have that, you know. We have all this death going on that's being caused by us. And yeah, it is us. It's our government. They represent us. And the thing that's changed since last week, the thing that's changed since last Tuesday, Election Day, is that now George W. Bush has a mandate. Well, you know, in his little sphere of reality, he has a mandate. But if you look at the real facts, people did vote for him. The majority of people in this country did vote for him. I know there are people out there saying there was election fraud, it was all, you know, a conspiracy, but I kind of don't buy it this time. I kind of have a hard time buying that. Yeah, I'm sure there's all kinds of problems with the electronic voting and with election results not being counted properly, but I also think there are more of them out there than us, and by us I mean people who are opposed to this kind of garbage. And so what that means is that the public, the United States public, has endorsed what George W. Bush has done for the past 4 years. Specifically, things like the Patriot Act, invading other countries, clamping down on human rights everywhere, and imposing a state of fear. Now, maybe not all of us have endorsed this. Maybe it's only 5 out of 10, and we only got 4 out of 10 opposed to it. But in the eyes of the world and in the eyes of people around here, I think that's enough. We could claim before that Bush was not elected by a majority of the people, that it was this crazy electoral college that got him into power. But we can't claim that this time. We can't claim, even if there are 1 million votes that were cast the wrong way, Bush was still ahead by 3.6 million. That's a lot. I mean, yeah, 51% to 48% or whatever it turned out to be, but it's still a significant number. And to me, I have a problem figuring out how anybody could have voted for this idiot. This guy who's completely screwed up our relations with the rest of the world, has resulted in tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of deaths. I don't understand why we don't have his ass going over to The Hague right now to face war crime trials. I really don't understand that. And I blame the rest of the world for that as well. Because the rest of the world should be a lot more pissed off at us than they are. I mean, maybe they're afraid. Yeah, I could see that. We got nukes. We got all kinds of idiots in charge of them. But at some point, you have to speak up, regardless of what you're facing, regardless of how many guns they have, of how big a bully they are. At some point, you just have to stand up and say, that's enough. And the rest of the world has yet to do that. The rest of the world has yet to come after us and say, knock it off already. The UN has been powerless. There should be sanctions. There should be all kinds of penalties for the way that this country has run roughshod over international law and invaded other countries. Now, you know, of course, when you say that it was wrong to invade Iraq, that right away turns you into a Saddam Hussein compatriot, which is a great simplistic way of getting people on your side. and the people who do this kind of thing are good at that. They really are. I think the reason why this election was lost was because of the fear factor. I mean, I'm not the first person to say that, certainly, but look at the tactics that were used. Look at how this the anti-gay initiatives or anti-gay marriage initiatives, okay? Look at how they predominated. All of a sudden, that became the issue that everybody was in a tizzy about. Now, were people putting these referendums on the ballot in favor of gay marriage? No, the people who put the referendums on there were opposed to it. They were outraged. They thought that the gays were knocking on their doors, and I don't know what they thought the danger was, but that had to be dealt with immediately. So they put these referendums on the ballot and got people afraid. Yes, they got not afraid of terrorism, afraid of gay people. They got people to turn out to the polls because they were afraid that the institution of marriage was about to be destroyed somehow. Now, you know, I think the whole thing is really silly. I don't understand what the controversy is. I think if consenting adults want to get married, what's the big deal? But you know what? I can postpone having that conversation for a few years if the rest of the country isn't ready to deal with it yet. It's not an urgent matter, but it was turned into an urgent matter by the people who supported Bush. They got it onto the ballot, they got people to turn out, and while they were there voting against the gay marriage initiatives, they voted for Bush. Now, how much of an effect did this have? I don't know. I didn't add up all the numbers. I'm not sure how many people voted against the gay marriage initiatives. But let's you know, if anyone out there has access to these numbers, I'd like to know about it. Let's add up all the people who voted against gay marriage initiatives and say, oh, I don't know, let's say 40% of those people wouldn't have turned out ordinarily. Now, I just pull that number out of the air. I think it's somewhat of neither too high nor too low number. Now, 40% of the people who voted against these initiatives, is that more or less than 3.6 million? You know, maybe it had an effect, maybe it didn't. I mean, I'm sure it had some effect. But the whole thing is just, it's unbelievable how it came about. So 11 states got this gay marriage initiative to vote on, and it was turned down in every single one of them. They say rarely in American history have so many voters, close to one-fifth of the electorate, so I think it's going to be a pretty big number. Rarely have so many people had a chance on a single election day to express themselves on such a highly contentious social issue. You know, I wonder, could the Democrats have done something differently? Could they have come up with some sort of fear factor themselves, you know? How does that work? How do you get people to turn out? Can we get a referendum on, invading other countries? Can we get a referendum on people being tortured and killed? It's kind of difficult. It's kind of difficult when you have some semblance of ideals. But the fact that I think everyone has to face is that whatever the Democrats have been doing, it's not working. It's not working. They're not speaking loudly enough. They're too cautious. And rather than trying to win over more Republicans, I think the real idea is to get more people to be Democrats from the start. That's if you believe in this whole two-party system nonsense, which I really don't, but you got to take this thing one step at a time. Clearly, a third party has no chance at all of doing anything. So, the only way to proceed is to have some kind of change on the two-level system, two-party system. Now, you know, I'm glad I said this last week. I'm glad I asked people to be somewhat calm in the face of what I saw as a defeat coming up, and it sure turned out to be. Oh boy, did it ever turn out to be! Was there anything the Democrats won? They lost seats in the Senate, in the House. They lost the presidency. All these right-wing issues won. There was an issue in California to take a second look at the three strikes law so that somebody who steals a candy bar doesn't go to prison for life. No, that got turned down. Can't have that. In a way, it's kind of funny, you know? It's sort of like a worst-case scenario. Wow, how bad can things possibly get? And I said this a few weeks ago, too, that I'm kind of interested in how bad things can get. So people need to not take this so seriously that they let it affect them in a bad way. Yeah, of course, it's going to affect all of us in a bad way, whether we know it or not. But we can't let it discourage us from standing up for what we believe in. And I think everybody needs to think of something, to search into their souls and do something differently now as a result of this, something that you would not have done ordinarily. But because we now have another 4 years of Bush, resolve to do something that might make a difference. Join some organization. Take some action. Extend some extra effort that you normally would not have extended. And maybe something positive can come out of this as a result of that. But the one thing you cannot do is be cowed into submission, be pushed into a corner somewhere and told to keep quiet. That is not going to work. So yeah, the people who are against all the crap didn't win the election, but that doesn't mean that they lost the momentum. And boy, I've never seen such momentum. I've never seen so many people unified from all different walks of life to speak up against something that's wrong, that we know is bad, that we know is harmful, that we know is stupid and self-defeating. And the only thing that could be more stupid and more self-defeating is if we just accept these results and go away, you know, not continue to speak up. No, there's no mandate here. 51% is not a mandate. It's a slim majority. And we shouldn't deny that fact. We shouldn't deny that there's a lot of people out there who don't agree. And maybe we can convince them, maybe we can't convince them. But regardless, they're not going to silence us. And every day that this war continues, or this invasion, as I like to refer to it instead, every day that the Patriot Act is in existence, every day that we live in a climate of fear with color codes determining our fear level, we need to speak out. We need to do as much as we possibly can to get more people. And now let's look at the good. Let's look at the good that has come out of this. Okay, Bush reelected, or elected for the first time, as some people like to say. He has to clean up his own mess now. See, if Kerry had come in, I don't think the Iraq action would have ended. Probably would have gotten even worse, because I think that's sort of inevitable. Even if Ralph Nader is in office, I think it would have still gotten worse. But now it's all Bush. Now everything that happens is on him, and it's on the people who voted for him, because if you voted for Bush, and boy, I'm really upset that I can't reach the red states right now, but if you voted for Bush, you voted for this war. Oh, yes, you did. Yes, you did. You cannot talk your way out of that. Bush invaded a country that had nothing to do with 9/11, basing the whole thing on lies. And if you just read the facts and do some digging on your own, you'll see that there was no reason at all to invade this country. And that doesn't mean I'm Saddam Hussein's biggest fan or a fan at all. There are a lot of nasty people in the world, and I don't think anybody wants us to invade all of them. What the reasons were, who knows, who cares? The reasons were not what we were told. They were not weapons of mass destruction. They were not regime change. Look, the regime has changed. Saddam Hussein is out of power, but yet we're still there. Yet we're still there dictating what regime they're going to have. What we're saying, the people in Fallujah that are fighting the invaders, they're terrorists, and they must be killed. Explain this to me, please, somebody. If a foreign country comes into your country with tanks and soldiers, and whatever level of atrocities come with that, and you fight back by doing whatever you have to do, what does that make you? Imagine it happening in this country right now. I mean, I bet a lot of the people who are gung-ho for this war would be blowing themselves up and taking out anybody who they thought was collaborating with the enemy. It's not so unusual. And, of course, you know, this is going to be translated into me supporting people blowing U.S. troops up. No, that's not at all what I said. But you have to try and understand this. You have to try and understand what is actually going on. And you have to get your explanation straight. Okay? No weapons of mass destruction, no Saddam Hussein. What now? What now? You know? How many demands are we going to be making of this country? Any kind of insurgency is seen as a threat, as something that is that has to be stopped, that has to be wiped out. What exactly do the people of Fallujah want? Has anyone ever asked that question? Because I'm curious, what do these people want? These people who are fighting U.S. troops, what? They don't want Saddam Hussein back in power, because I don't think that's possible. So what do they want? Their own country back, maybe? Maybe they don't agree with people in another part of the country. Yeah, well, you know, that's one of the advantages of having a dictator. He can sort of keep all the warring factions apart from each other. That's what Tito did in Yugoslavia, and look what happened after he died. Can't say that that's a surprise, you know, when you remove the dictator, all of a sudden you're opening Pandora's box. But the way to deal with it is not to simply wipe out one side in favor of another. So while this bombardment of Fallujah is going on, you know, I wish somebody would be talking about this, would be trying to figure out what it is that those people want. And is it so completely unreasonable? But yeah, it's all on those people that voted for Bush, because it's your war now. It's your invasion. It's your Patriot Act. And if the Democrats have any brains at all, they will not play ball with these people. I think the majority of Americans, regardless of whether or not they voted, see these things as bad. All right, our phone number is 631-632-9872, if anybody is out there listening to our broadcast signal. Please give us a call. You know, people need to speak out about what's happening. And this is sort of like, I don't want to trivialize history in any way, but after 9/11, people needed to talk. They needed to express themselves. And I sort of feel the same sense of shock as to how this election turned out. It's just such a staggering defeat. It makes you wonder, you know, do you have any touch with reality at all? Where do we go from here? What's the next step? Is there a next step? Should we give up? I mean, one person killed himself. Went to ground zero and killed himself. Did you hear about this? And the crazy thing is, if you read the media accounts of that, the big debate, the big issue regarding that particular tragic event is, how did he get past security? How did he get past the fence to kill himself at ground zero? Not why is somebody so upset at the direction this country is going that he would take his own life. No, that's not an issue. How did he get past security? As if there's anything at ground zero that a terrorist would need or want. It's a pile of dirt at this point. You know? It makes no sense at all. So the security issue right there baffles me, but that's all people can think about, is how did somebody get past security? It's sad. 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. I'm sorry, those people are listening on the archive now, because we weren't available live, but that's just the way technology works sometimes, or doesn't work. The CIA interrogated and roughed up Iraqi prisoners in a romper room where a handcuffed and hooded terrorist suspect was kicked, slapped, and punched shortly before he died last year at the Abu Ghraib prison. That's according to a Navy SEAL who testified on Monday, actually last Monday. Blood was visible on the hood worn by the prisoner, who was named Manadel al-Jamadi, as he was led into the interrogation room at Baghdad International Airport in November 2003. testifying under a grant of immunity. The witness, identified only by his rank as a hospital corpsman, said he kicked al-Jamadi several times, slapped him in the back of the head, and punched him. Five or six other CIA personnel in the room laid their hands on the prisoner, he said, but he did not provide details. Sometime later, al-Jamadi was found dead in the shower room at Abu Ghraib, less than an hour after two CIA personnel brought him into Abu Ghraib as a so-called ghost detainee. Such detainees were not listed in a normal roster of military prisoners. This is the kind of garbage that this country has endorsed. Meanwhile, again, 631-632-9872. It's so sad when we lose the internet, because that's where all our calls seem to come from. But I know there are people out there, people driving. Maybe you're so infuriated by what I'm saying that you can't dial straight. Just, you know, stop, look at your phone, dial calmly, and you'll get through. 631-632-9872. I need to talk about this too, you know. It's very therapeutic to get these things off your chest after a week of dealing with it. Okay, we got some phone calls. Good evening, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you? Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Farmingville.
Farmingville, great. What's on your mind?
First of all, thanks for being a voice of reason, especially on Long Island.
Well, thanks for seeing it that way.
And just a point to note, even though 51% of the voters voted for Bush, that's actually just 60% of the electors, if I'm correct, right? And that's a small, when you look at it, it's a small portion of voters compared to all Americans today.
Yeah, absolutely. But you have to wonder why people didn't feel motivated to go out and vote in this election in particular. You know, those people, I can't understand why somebody would have the opportunity to vote and then not exercise it.
Exactly. And when you think about it, I think a lot of people just would not, I guess they feel disempowered in many ways.
Well, this certainly helps them feel disempowered, I'll say that.
And one of the key things, I don't know whether you heard about this, but there was a spike on the internet for the Canadian immigration website, because a lot of people were thinking of moving over to Canada the day after the election.
That's interesting. That's definitely interesting. Well, you know, I think it's important to have an exit strategy of sorts, especially if you're of age to be drafted, because regardless of what Bush says, don't believe him. They are going to need more bodies, and that's exactly what they will be. But at the same time, the only way anything is ever going to change is if people stick around and fight.
Exactly. I agree. You got to dig in, fight, and that happens today, before election time comes 4 years from now.
Uh-huh.
So we got to change it from the grassroots, change the local governments, and hopefully when time comes again, in 4 years' time, we have somebody else.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm curious who's going to be running on the Republican side. I don't think it's going to be Cheney.
And I hope not.
They're talking about Hillary Clinton, which I don't think is a good idea, but that's just my own personal bias. What do you think the Democrats did wrong this time around?
It's the same issue. It's the issue about a matter of who's lesser of the two evils, in the sense that everybody's trying to outdo each other in terms of who's being more conservative than the other. And that means who has the biggest stick, who has, I think that's why Kerry failed in many sense.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They're trying to cater to the same group of people, and they forgot that the Democrats are actually the ones, they forgot about people who are on the left, pretty much.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right. I think they tried to appeal too much to the people on the right, and those aren't the people you're going to win over.
And they forgot about everybody else who's out there.
Mm-hmm.
The individual who's working at Walmart who has to hold two jobs. They forgot about people who's going to worry about their kids' future, because the Social Security is going to be, privatized. All things, all those key things, and they don't appeal. The both parties don't appeal to the masses of people out there, and that's the problem we have. And unfortunately, like you say, the third parties don't have potential to win the election, at least in the near future. But I think we got to change the system somehow. That's the only way to do it, to change the rules of the game.
Well, one thing that definitely needs to be changed is this Electoral College nonsense. I mean, you know, if Kerry had just won a few thousand more votes in Ohio, he'd be the president now, even though he was behind by nearly 4 million votes.
Maybe true. Maybe true. But
that's
again,
ridiculous.
If you want to change the rule of the game, we got to play it differently. And that means we got to change the system the way it is, the two-party system.
I agree, totally.
Right.
Thanks so much for your call.
Good with you.
All right, 631-632-9872 is our phone number if you have an opinion and you're out there somewhere. Please give us a call and tell us what you think about how it all turned out 1 week ago. Good evening. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead. You're on.
That's me. Okay. All right. I am nuts over this election. I think it's disgusting, and I'm a mother of five. I'm a teacher. My husband's a construction worker, and I think I'm totally getting screwed. I've had it with all the things that the Republicans are doing. I think the Democrats had no backbone the whole time. I voted for Kerry, but I think the Democrats total weaseled in and just did a job of cover their ass because they didn't want to seem like, oh, we're not backing the president and all this nonsense. And it's all nonsense. Do your job. I'm tired of people that don't do their job. And all they want to do is put on their suit, go out, and do whatever the hell. I don't know what they're accomplishing, but they're not accomplishing anything. And we keep them in office.
Uh-huh.
I don't get it.
Yeah.
Nobody is reading the newspaper all the way. Finish the article.
Very good point.
Buy the newspaper. Buy a book.
What are your sources of news?
Say that again?
What are your sources of news?
The New York Times. You go into Borders, there's 1,000 books in there about what Bush was putting. In Bush at War with Bob Woodward, he talks about how he was already planning to go to Iraq before 9/11 even happened.
That's right.
You know, this was on his agenda, and no one seems to even... That was one of his top three priorities going into the presidency. It's insane.
Absolutely, and now he has a mandate. Now he has the support of the American people in his mind. You can only imagine what's on his agenda now.
But I everybody is working their ass off, and nobody's putting the time in to read the newspaper, read what's going on, read how they're taking away your freedom, read how they're screwing us completely. I got a 15-year-old in high school, I got a 12-year-old in middle school, and if they're getting drafted, we're moving. Because we're not going over there. We're just not. There's no way I'm letting my kids go over there. And if they start in with the draft, I'm definitely moving. There is no way. I mean, it's a beautiful country, but if it's going down the tubes, I'm out of here. Because I'm a mom. You know what I'm saying?
Right,
I'm looking out for my kids. I've been trying to do things, and I'm going to vote and talk to other people. But you know what? We all want to stay in our own little world and don't get out to vote. Oh, I don't like Kerry, but, you know, I don't like Bush either, so I'm not going to vote. That's the stupidest thing in the world. But they're the PTA mom, and they don't step out of Comac, and they don't step out of Smithtown to even worry about the rest of the world. And they're just worried about getting dinner on the table when they need to open a newspaper once in a while, forget about your kid's homework. When it's done, look and see what's going on in your world, and look at how you're letting it go down the tubes. And it's making me crazy.
All right. Well, you hang in there because we need people like you. All right?
Yeah.
All right.
Good luck tonight.
Thanks. Thanks for calling.
All right. Bye.
And I think, you know, so many people realize that. So many people realize that you have to read. You have to know what's going on in the world. You have to pay attention. There are just so many people in this part of the world who don't seem to care what happens outside their little village, their little community. And they'll just follow blindly. They'll do what they're told. And they won't care what the rest of the world thinks or feels or how their actions directly or indirectly affect them. So, yeah, you know, reading the New York Times is a great way to know what's going on. And of course, if you can get the BBC, that's another way. You can always get them online, but it still annoys me to this day that people can't get BBC News except for that half-hour period in the evening or morning, unless you subscribe to a system outside the United States. I don't get it. I don't understand why we can't have what everybody else in the world has. But here's something. Here's something that actually might make a difference, all right? It's trivial. It's a little tiny drop in the bucket, but it could be something. And you know what? If we get together and we kind of unite on this and maybe, you know, raise our voices a little bit or a lot, you might see something that is an improvement. What am I talking about? Okay, this story I just got. There's a channel on a lot of cable systems and satellite systems called CNN-FN. It's CNN Financial News. Probably nobody listening to me has ever watched it, but it's out there. It's on just about every digital cable system, and I think it's on DirecTV and Dish Network. But guess what? It's going out of business. Yeah. The struggling CNN-FN Financial News Network is shutting down in mid-December. Now, what's interesting about this, I never watch this channel either, in case you think I'm nuts. No, I don't watch it, but on the weekends, the channel doesn't broadcast. Because apparently they can't think of anything financial to say over the weekend, fine. What they do, they don't show a test pattern, they simply switch over to CNN International. Now, CNN International is kind of like CNN that we see in this country, but different, because the reporters are all around the world, and you get a much more global perspective of things. People are anchoring from London and from the Mideast and from Asia, and you see reports there that you do not see in this country. You don't get the stupid morning show people. You don't get the personalities. You ever watch CNN? It's all about the personalities. It's not about the news so much. Every program seems to have a name associated with it. That's the most important thing to them. Not the case here. CNN International is not like that. And if you go overseas, if you go to Europe, you go to Asia, you go to Australia, you'll see that version of CNN. And it's just so much more intelligent. You get more out of it. It's not quite the BBC, but it's a big step in that direction. Okay, so what does that have to do with anything? CNN-FN is shutting down in mid-December. And when that happens, carriers are going to have a choice as to what to do with the empty slot. And CNN is trying to persuade cable and satellite operators to replace CNN-FN with CNN International, the channel that airs on the weekends. Now imagine that. Imagine having an international news channel that the rest of the world sees with a somewhat intelligent and worldly perspective that you don't have now. So if you bombard your cable provider or your satellite provider or whoever with requests, demands, whatever you see fit to do, to carry CNN International when CNN-FN goes dark in December, you'll be taking a very important step towards enlightening a lot of people. Because when you turn on the TV, you might actually see something that makes a little bit of sense. You might actually see something that you can learn from. You'll see reports from the Mideast that you won't see here. You'll see reports from Africa that you won't see here. You'll see programs that deal with things. You'll learn. It's not as good as reading a newspaper. It's not as good as reading a book. But it is a step. So, yeah, you know, why not? Why not take that step? Or you could keep quiet and it'll be replaced with another shopping channel. Think of the people who will stumble upon something like this, who aren't part of this conversation, who will turn on that channel one day and learn, and then pick up a book, and then pick up a newspaper. It's all a big stepping stone. So yeah, call your cable company, call your provider, your satellite provider, and insist that they carry CNN International in December when CNN Financial News goes away, because that's a step. And then if we win that battle, maybe we can get BBC over here too. And then before you know it, we have alternate perspectives. And I'm convinced that when people are presented with alternate perspectives, they'll learn. They'll think a little bit more. I really think if everybody had the opportunity to see different perspectives from the rest of the world, that they wouldn't have voted the way they did. All right. We're out of time, but before we go, I just want to say a couple of things. Veterans Day is coming up on Thursday. Also, Remembrance Day. If you have the opportunity to tune into a foreign network of some sort, you might see a ceremony that takes place at 11 a.m. on the 11th day of the 11th month, which I believe is the time that World War I ended. And you'll also see, if you watch television outside the United States, you'll see people wearing these little red poppies around this time of year. Everyone from newscasters to prime ministers to just people in the street. And that's to commemorate the people who sacrificed their lives for whatever crazy foreign policy existed at the time. In Australia, they do this on April 25th. But the song I'm about to play has to do with something that affects Australians. The Battle of Gallipoli, which basically took place on April 25th of 1915. That's why they commemorate this on April 25th every year. Australian troops landed on the Gallipoli Peninsula. That's in Turkey. Did you know Australia and Turkey were at war? Yeah, they were. But instead of finding the flat beach they expected, they found they had been landed at the incorrect position, and they faced steep cliffs and constant barrages of enemy fire and shelling. Around 20,000 soldiers landed on the beach over the next 2 days to face a well-organized, well-armed, large Turkish force determined to defend their country. Thousands of Australian men died in the hours that followed the landing at the wrong beach. And that beach would eventually come to be known as Anzac Cove, and hence Anzac Day on April 25th. And I think it just goes to show the stupidity of wars with no purpose, without a clear end goal in mind. And it's sad to say, but I think we'll be hearing many songs like this having to do with what's going on today. Fodder for thought. And until next week, stay awake.
Now when I was a young man, I carried my pack, and I lived the free life of a rover. From the Murray's green basin to the dusty outback, I waltzed my Matilda all over. And in 1915, my country said, son, it's time to stop rambling, there's work to be done. So they gave me a tin hat, and they gave me a gun, and they sent me away to the war. And the band played Waltzing Matilda as the ship pulled away from the quay. And amid all the tears, flag waving and cheers, we sailed off for Gallipoli. Well, I remember that terrible day when our blood stained the sand and the water, and how in that hell that they called Suvla Bay, we were butchered like lambs of the slaughter. Johnny Turk, he was ready, oh, he primed himself well. He rained us with bullets, and he showered us with shell. And in 5 minutes flat, we were all blown to hell. Nearly blew us back home to Australia. And the band played Waltzing Matilda when we stopped to bury our slain. And we buried ours, and the Turks buried theirs. And it started all over again. Those who were living just tried to survive in that mad world of blood, death, and fire. And for 10 weary weeks I kept myself alive, though around me the corpses piled higher. Then a big turkey shell knocked me arse overhead, and when I awoke in me hospital bed and saw what it had done, and I wish I were dead. Never knew there were worse things than dying. For no more I'll go waltzing Matilda all around the green bush far and near. For to hump tent and pace, man needs both legs, waltzing Matilda for me. They collected the wounded, the crippled, the maimed, and they shipped us back home to Australia. The armless, the legless, the blind, the insane, those proud, wounded heroes of Sula. And when the ship pulled into Starkiller Quay, I looked at the place where my legs used to be, and thanked Christ there was no one there waiting for me to grieve and to mourn and to pity. And the band played Waltzing Matilda as they carried us down the gangway. But nobody cheered, they just stood there and stared. Then they turned all their faces away. So now, every April, I sit on my porch and I watch the parade pass before me. And I see my old comrades, how proudly they march, renewing their dreams of past glory. I see the old men, all tired, stiff and sore, the weary old heroes of a forgotten war. And the young people ask, what are they marching for? And I ask myself the same question. And the band plays Waltzing Matilda, and the old men still answer the call. But year after year, the numbers get fewer. Someday no one will march there at all. Waltzing Matilda, Waltzing Matilda, who'll come a waltzing Matilda with me? And their ghosts may be heard as they march by the billabong. Thank you.